Okay, we're starting here on the top of Yud Gimel and Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara here quotes from our Mishnah, Ketzad Potrot Tzarotuhen. Here the Gemara is asking about Tzarat Hatzara, linkage or chain link of Tzarot. How do we know that that works? How do we know that not only is a Tzarat Tayerva Ptura, but the Tzara of the Tzara is also Ptura? So it's something that we discussed back on Gimel and Bet. With regards to the Braita, the Braita there gave a reason, and we said there that that was only according to the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. There's actually an alternate opinion, which we're going to see here, which is Rav Ashi, which is Menahani Milei. How do we know this? Am Rav Yehuda Makra Litzror. HaTorah Ribta Tzorot Harbe. So the word Litzror, instead of writing word Tzara, Litzror is multiple Tzorot, and that's why there's this chain link effect of the Tzarot, that the Tzarat Erva, then if she goes ahead and marries one of the other brothers, and she has a co-wife with this other brother, not only is she Ptura from Yibum, if the second brother also passes away without children, but so is her co-wife, and if that co-wife again goes and marries the third brother, and has a co-wife with her, she'll be Ptura herself and the co-wife. So, on and on and on, this phenomenon takes place, and that's because this word Litzror implies multiple Tzarot. That's what we saw the Girsa was on the Braita back on Gimel Amud Bet, although many of the Rishonim took that out of the Girsa because of the next statement, which is Rav Ashi Amar Svarahi. It's just a logical argument. Tzara, Maitai Masira. Why is a Tzara restricted? Dimikom Erva Kaima. She's with an other Erva. Which means that when she's Tzarata Erva, she's then restricted. That we learn out of the psukim, whether it's Rabbi or the Chachamim, we learn that at a different psukim. But nevertheless, we know for certain that the Tzarat Erva is restricted. And since she's restricted, that means that she remains a Shadach. That means that she remains as an Erva. So if she's still an Erva, then when she goes ahead and marries another one of the brothers, she retains that status of Erva vis-a-vis whichever brother it is that had a problem with the Ervga, her co-wife. And then when she or when that brother passes away and she falls to Yibum, she's still an Erva of Eshadach. And Eshadach doesn't get wiped out. So if she's an Erva, then Tzarat Tzarat Nami become Erva Kaima. Again, she's still an Erva, and therefore the co-wife to her is now in a situation of Yibum together with an Erva. So if the basic position is Tzarat Erva is Ptura, which we know is true, then, in the next scenario, where she goes in and marries another one of the brothers, then you also, again, have Tzarat Erva, because she is an Erva. Because she wasn't allowed to perform Yibum, this is what we said in the beginning of the Masechta, there's always a tension in the performance of Yibum between Yibum and Eshadach. Every performance of Yibum involves the overriding of an Erva of Eshadach. But if you're not permitted to perform Yibum, then Eshadach remains in place. That means that she's a full-fledged Erva, because the Eshadach stays in place. Now, that's the case when she goes on to marry another one of the brothers, and then falls to Yibum again, her status is that of an Erva. So her co-wife is therefore a Tzarata Erva. And that's how Rav Ashi says Tzarat Tzarata works, because every instance when there is a block against performing Yibum, all those women are therefore Arayot of Eshadach. And if they go marry some of the other brothers, then there's no way that this individual can then go ahead later on and marry her or have her co-wife marry him because she's an Erva and she will create other Tzarot Erva.
She married one of the other brothers, that's two of them.
No, because it's a case where, for instance, you have Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Reuven's daughter is married to Shimon. Then Shimon passes away and he has Reuven's daughter as wife and another woman as his wife, co-wife. So Reuven can't perform Yibum here because his daughter is Nerva. The co-wife is Tzarat Erva. But Levi can perform Yibum. Levi goes ahead and performs Yibum with the Tzara. He chooses the Tzara to perform Yibum with, the co-wife. Now, Levi passes away without children. He has two wives. He has the Tzara from Shimon, the co-wife from Shimon, plus another co-wife. For Reuven, they will remain restricted because that co-wife that fell to him from Shimon was restricted as Tzarat Erva. That means that she's an Erva of Eshadach. When she goes in and marries Levi, she remains an Erva to him. And then Levi's co-wife is Tzarat Erva, because that woman is to Reuven, vis-a-vis Reuven's an Erva, and therefore the wife is a Tzarat Erva. And that's what Rav Ashi says. That continuous stream is all logical. You don't need a pasuk to teach you that. As soon as you can't perform Yibum, you are an erva. And if you're an erva, then you create a tzareta erva. And that's why tzareta tzareta applies down the line. Next piece of the Mishnah is ketzad. Imei tuhein. Mishnah there says that if the erva dies, performs miyun, gets divorced before there's Yibum performed here or there's a necessity for Yibum, then the co-wives are mutarot to perform Yibum. So again, in our scenario where Shimon married Reuven's daughter, and then Reuven's daughter predeceases him, and now all that's left of Shimon is the co-wife. If Shimon then passes away without children, Reuven can marry that co-wife because his daughter is out of the picture. That's what the Mishnah describes. If the Erva is pushed out of the picture before the time of Yibum, then Yibum can be performed with the co-wives. So now, Vafilo Kanas Olusov Giresh. Is that true that even if he took in the co-wife and then only after the fact divorced her? So you have two scenarios here in which he divorces this Erva. Again, Shimon is married to Reuven's daughter. So it can happen in two situations. He can be married to Reuven's daughter, divorce her, and then marry another woman or another woman. In that scenario, they were never co-wives together. They were both wives of Shimon, but they never co-wives. So in that scenario, it would be very understandable why the new wives are not restricted by the daughter. But what happens in an instance where he's married to Reuven's daughter, and then he marries other wives, and then only after that does he divorce Reuven's daughter? So they were co-wives at a certain point in time in the middle, and then he divorces her. So she's out of the picture now, but there was a point in time where she was in the picture. Is that really true? Our Mishnah implies that even if the order was he married all these women and then later divorced this daughter, that would be okay in terms of Yibum. Viraminu. We have a Mishnayot coming up later on Daf Lamed. Gimel Achim, three brothers. Shnai Mehem Nisuim Bet Achayot. Two of them are married to sisters. You have Reuven and Shimon, married to Rachel and Leah. Vechad Nasui Nachrit. And then you have Levi married to a woman who has no relationship. We'll call her Noah. Giresh Echad Mi Balei Achayot. One of those that's married to a sister divorces. So he divorces Ishto. Umeita Nasui Nachrit. And the one who's married to an outside woman, Levi, who's married to Noah, passes away. Fikinsa Hamigaresh. The one who had divorced his wife, Reuven, who had divorced Rachel, now takes Noah, Biyibum, no problem. She has no relationship to Reuven. There's no reason that he can't perform Yibum, but he takes his Yibum. Umate. And then Reuven dies. Now Shimon has Levi's wife, Noah, who now is married to Reuven, available to him for Yibum. Zohi Shamru, Shemetu, Onidgashu, Tzaroteim Mutarot. The Mishnah says, this is an instance by which the Gerushin, the divorcing of the woman, allows this to be Mutar. Because if Reuven was still married to his original wife, Rachel, Shimon would not be able to perform Yibum over here because there would be Achot Isha. His wife is Leah, and he can't marry Rachel, who is his wife's sister. But since Reuven already divorced her, and therefore Noah, who is Levi's old wife, who now Reuven performs Yibum with, is now available to Shimon without any problems. Because he was she was never a co-wife to Rachel, to Reuven, while he was married to Shimon's wife's sister. Where it says, Taima, that Mishnah sounds like Digiresh, Vachakach Kines. That's only in a case where he divorced first, that's the order in the Mishnah, and then afterwards he performed Yibum with Levi's wife. That's the order of that Mishnah. Aval Kines Vacharkach Giresh, it was the other way around. Had he married Levi's wife, meaning performed Yibum with Levi's wife Noah, and then only then divorced Rachel, lo, it would not work. So our Mishnah seems to imply that the order does not matter. Our Mishnah, and we'll see in a second, even seems to imply the opposite, but our Mishnah implies that he can be married to the co-wives, including the Erva, divorce the Erva, and nevertheless, the co-wife is permitted in Yibum. So in our scenario, again, we have Reuven and Shimon married to Rachel and Leah, and Levi married to Noah. Levi passes away without children. Noah is now available for Yibum. Reuven performs Yibum with her and is still married to Rachel. Then divorces Rachel and then passes away without children. Shimon, according to our Mishnah, can perform Yibum with Noah because Rachel is out of the picture. But the Mishnah on Daf Lamed seems to indicate that's only if Reuven had divorced Rachel prior to marrying Noah. That's the only way that Shimon could be still in the picture here. Had Levi died, and Noah was ahead, then ahead, Yibum with Reuven while he was still married to Rachel, that would make her Tzarat Ayirva. Even though now he goes ahead and divorces Rachel, nevertheless, since they were co-wives together at a certain point in time, the Mishnah Lamed seems to say, no go. It's a Tzarat Ayirva, even though now he's divorced from Rachel. So what are we going to do? So Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Tavra, Misha Shanazu, Lo Shanazu. The Mishnah says, Tavra means Lishbor Oto, break it. It's a terminology that's used by the Amoraim to describe a Mishnah that has multiple authors to it. Or, for instance, the Mishnah, our Mishnah here, is authored differently than the Mishnah on Daf Lamed. They have two different authors, which is Haitana Savar, Bitama Pelet. Our Tana, the Mishnah that we read on Daf Bet, that Tana believes that Mita Mapelet, Fred, you asked this question the other day, our Tana believes at the time of death, that's the determination of Yibum. So when Reuven passes away, that's when we take a snapshot and we figure out if there's Tzaret Erva. We check all the information at that moment because that's when the Yibum starts. So if since the Yibum or the possibility of Yibum starts then, let's look at the scenario. Reuven's already divorced from Rachel at that point in time. So when he dies without children, there's no Tzaret Erva because the Erva's out of the picture. That's what our Tana believes. But the high Tana Savar, the Tana found in Daf Lamed believes, Nisu'in Harishonim Mapilim. It's the first marriage that causes this. Because the woman or the Yibum is generated by the marriage. Marriage to the first brother is what generates the necessity for Yibum. You're right, you only, in reality, perform Yibum when the brother passes away without children. But why would you have to form Yibum in the first place? It's because he got married to these women. So the moment of marriage is what brings this woman into the world of Yibum. So she may never have to perform Yibum because she might have children, or this brother will have children through another wife, and therefore Yibum won't be relevant. But she is now within the world of Yibum as soon as she marries this brother who has other brothers from the father. She's brought into the world of Yibum. So we do the check then. We say, once she's married, what was the status of all the marriages at that point in time? And if her husband was married to an Erva at that time, she becomes a co-wife of an Erva. Because her entering into this world of Yibum with this brother happens at the moment that an Erva was still there. And therefore she's a Tzarat Erva. So the Mishnah later on says, the moment of marriage is the determining factor. Our Mishnah says that the moment of determination is at the death of the brother without children, when Yibum now becomes a reality. So again, we spoke about this earlier, this idea, this Chakira, that within Yibum, you always have to ask the question, that Yivama, or the performance of Yibum, how much of it is still relying on the original marriage, and therefore it's just an extension of the original marriage. Or, the original marriage brings you into the world of Yibum, but the second marriage is a completely new marriage. I mean, at the death of the brother, that opens up the possibility of a new marriage. Yes, of course, she had to be married to the brother in order to be within the world of Yibum, but then when this brother goes ahead and performs Yibum, it's as if we have a reset button that's set there. So you could suggest the same thing over here. At what point do you look at when Yibum is generated? If you look at it from the moment of marriage, you're really saying that the original marriage is the thing that dictates here all the way through. Even when one of the brothers performs Yibum, he's still really sitting on that original marriage. And because of that, that's what dictates what was going on at that moment is dictating over here. On the other hand, if you think that once the brother is out of the picture, the brother passed away without children, and now one of the brothers performs Yibum, he's now generating a new marriage. He's starting afresh. Then Mita Mapelet might be the determining factor over here. Yes, of course, she had to be married to his brother in order to come into the world of Yibum. But from the moment that the brother died, that's when the reality of Yibum sets in. And that's when we establish this marriage of Yibum. And it's a new start, and it's not necessarily connected directly to that original marriage. Of course, it is connected, but it's not just a continuation. And therefore, it would be Mita Mapelet. Again, it's not mochach to say that, but it's probably very likely we see this type of chakira throughout the Masechta of the challenge between, the tension between the original marriage and the new marriage, and which one is governing the relationship at this point in time. Rava Amar, Lolam Chatanu. Rava says, don't do that. don't say that there's multiple authorship here. It's a single Tana. V'zu v'ein tzarach lomar zu k'tani. It gives you an example. It's a literary style of saying, this is asur, and you don't even have to say the other is asur. Jazar Mishnah already describes the more extreme case, which is in a case where they were co-wives at some point. The Erva and the Tzara were co-wives at some point. And then he divorces the Erva. Our Mishnah says, go ahead and perform Yibum in that case. So if you said that, then certainly in the case where he divorced her prior to being married to the co-wife, when he divorced the Erva prior to being married to the co-wife, of course, in that case, can you perform Yibum? And that's the style of the Mishnah. The Mishnah gives you the more extreme case and says, that has Yibum. Mutarot in that case. And of course, she's mutar in the case where he pre-divorced her and then only married the co-wife. So it's a literary style without any significance, halachic significance. And our Mishnayot as a whole agree. They're giving you both examples, but in the first Mishnah, they gave you the most extreme example. And that governs everything, which is that even if they were co-wives at some point, as long as the erva is out of the picture at the time of death, then of the brother who doesn't have children, then we're fine with her performing Yibum. V'kol shi'chola l'ma'ein. Any girl who can perform mi'un. Viti ma'ein hashto. The Gemara asks a very simple question. Let her perform mi'un at this point in time. We understand that if the brother, Reuven, is married to two wives, one of which is a ktana, one of which is a minor, who is the erva over here. So Shimon's daughter, who is a ktana, is married to Reuven. Now, if Shimon married her to Reuven, she would be married mina Torah, and it would be a full-fledged marriage. A yitoma, a girl without a father, then cannot be married doraita, can only be married dirabanan. The problem here is that Shimon is clearly alive, otherwise the case of Yibum won't matter. Because if your father is not around, then you don't have an issue of erva. So how is Shimon around, and his daughter considered to be yitoma? But this is what we call Yitoma b'chaye aviha. She is an orphan while her father is still alive. That happens in a scenario where her father Shimon married her off to some individual, Kalev, and then Kalev divorced her. Not a brother, someone not related at all, and then Kalev divorced her. Once he divorces her, she's out of the control of her father because her father married her off. He gets to marry off once, not multiple times, min haTorah. So since he did it once she's divorced from Kalev, she's now on her own. She's the equivalent of a yitoma, of an orphan, and she can only can accept kiddushim midrabanan at this point in time. So then when she goes ahead and marries her uncle, Reuven, she is a ktana, but a yitoma b'chaye avia, which means that her marriage to Reuven is only midrabanan. So at this point, she's married to him midrabanan. Plus, Reuven has other wives as well. Other wives that are Gdolim, other wives that are Minha Torah. Reuven now passes away. If Reuven passes away, this Tana, who is a Erva to Shimon, his daughter, she's causing a problem over here. Shimon cannot perform Yibum because of her. Take a step back. Had she performed Miyun with Reuven, which means had she rejected the marriage to Reuven beforehand, then she would have been out of the picture. And Reuven's co-wife would be permitted to marry Shimon at that time. So what the Gemara is asking now is, why don't we have her perform Mi'un even after the death of Reuven? After Reuven dies, let her just say, I don't want to be in this. Whether it's, I don't want to be in this Yibum, I didn't want that original marriage. Let her perform Mi'un at that time and take her out of the picture. Because Mi'un works, it's a rejection of Kiddushin de Rabbanan, it's a rejection of a rabbinic marriage, and it works by being Oker Mi'ikaro. It works by undermining it retroactively. It's as if they were never married. It's the equivalent of an annulment. There is no marriage here. So what we say to her is, if you were to perform Mi'un now, perform this annulment at this moment in time, it would be as if you were never married to Reuven. If you were never married to Reuven, then Reuven's co-wives are now available for Yibum to Shimon. So why not annul the marriage even post the passing of her husband, Reuven, because that would solve our problem here, even though he's not here. Now, the way it might work is that she just does Mi'un with the Miyabim. But, assuming that she can perform Yibum post the death of her husband, and it'll be effective retroactively, then why does she do that? Tamein hashto vitit yabim. And then the co-wives she would be able to perform Yibum over here. So when it says, Lema Messiah le Rabbi Oshaya, let us say that this supports the position of Rabbi Oshaya, Dam Rabbi Oshaya. Mima'enet lima'amaro, veina mima'enet lizikato. You're allowed to perform miyun when it comes to ma'amar. You cannot perform miyun when it comes to zika. When a woman falls to yibum, there's what we call a zika that is created at that time. The zika means that this yabam and this yavama have the possibility of performing yibum. They are now in the world of yibum, and something has to be addressed. Either they have to perform yibum or they have to perform chalitza. That's called the zika. That exists midoraita, minatorah. There is a bond between them, which we've described along the way as being like a partial marriage. They're quasi-married at this point in time. And either they fully get married by performing yibum, or they unlock that by performing chalitza. But there's also something called ma'amar. Ma'amar was a rabbinic introduction, which is ma'amar is the equivalent of kiddushin. In a normal marriage, there are two stages to the marriage. There's kiddushin, which is hariat mikudeshet li. Whatever methodology you pick, the Mishnah in Kiddushin lays out three ways you can do this. And then there is a consummation of the marriage, which is through Nisuin. So you have Kiddushin and Nisuin. With regards to a Yivama, there's only one stage there. The one stage is Nisuin, which is all he has to do is have to bi'ah with her, and then that consummates the Yibum, and there is no stage of Kiddushin. There's only a stage of Nisuin. It might be because the Kiddushin was created by the original marriage, and therefore you don't need to create it again. It's the Nisuin that you have to create here, and that might be the bifurcation of the din of the chakira that we saw before. The kiddushin is a product of the first marriage. The nisuin is a product of the second marriage or the yibum. And therefore, that's why there's this tension here, because the first marriage generated the kiddushin, and the yibum created the nisuin. But in that scenario, there is no kiddushin. The Rabbanan went ahead and introduced a form of kiddushin called ma'amar. It says that when one of the brothers intends to perform yibum with a woman, instead of just taking her as a wife, he performs ma'amar, which is this kiddushin midrabanan. So what Rabbi Shaya says is, miyun, which is an activity or an action midrabanan, has the ability to unwind kiddushin midrabanan, has the ability to unwind ma'amar. But miyun does not have the ability to unwind the necessity for chalitza. Chalitza, which normally would be doraita, over here it happens to be derabanan because she's a ketana, the miyun won't help to unwind the chalitza. So in our scenario here, where Reuven was married midrabanan to Shimon's daughter, plus he had other co-wives, then Reuven passes away without children, the possibility is that he would have to perform chalitza with this woman, with this ketana, and miyun is just not strong enough to get rid of that problem. That means she remains an erva to her father, Shimon, and the co-wives would be precluded from performing yibum in this instance. Had one of the brothers performed ma'amar with her, miyun would still be strong enough to undo or unwind the ma'amar. But chalitza requires something stronger. Or, in other words, you can't just get rid of this ktana by performing miyun over here. And that's supported by our understanding of the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't suggest that she should perform miyun over here. That would support Rabbi Shaya. Where it says, lo, tzarat erva shayni. Being a co-wife to an erva is a different scenario. Detani Rami Barchazkel. Mi'ana babal muteret aviv. Mi'ana biyabam asura laaviv. This is something we saw in yesterday's daf. It's hard to understand totally, but the Gemara has this position, which is, if a young girl, ketana, got married to an individual, for instance here, Reuven married a ketana, and then she performs miyun with her husband. She says, I don't want to be married to Reuven anymore. I'm done with this. I want out. It works. She annuls the marriage, and now she's a free woman. Can she marry Reuven's father, Yaakov? The Gemara says, yes. She's allowed to marry his father, Yaakov, because an annulment says she was really never married to Reuven. Since she was never married to Reuven, she can go ahead and marry his father, Yaakov. Well, they had an intimate relationship. That's not a problem. The fact that Reuven had an intimate relationship with this ketana is not relevant because it was, quote-unquote, out of wedlock. She becomes mefutat vino, in a sense. She becomes a woman who had consensual relationship with Reuven, but it was out of wedlock because she annulled the wedding. And we know that a father can marry mefutat or anusat vino. According to everyone, that's even according to the Chachamim, according to Rabbi Yehuda, You're allowed to marry anusat mufutat bino. So in that case, if she performs miyun, permitted to go ahead and marry the father afterwards. There's no erva over here. But that is not true. Miyun abi abam asura aviv. If she only annuls her marriage after the passing of her husband, again, in this instance where Reuven passes away after being married to this ketana, and this ketana at that point says, I don't want to be in this position of yibum, I want out. She says, if she, I don't want this marriage, she can annul the marriage. It works. But she will remain asur to Reuven's father at this point in time. Now that seems illogical. Why should she be asur to the father? Nothing's changed over here. She annulled the marriage. He was never married to Reuven. Yet, in the scenario where she annuls the marriage before the death of Reuven, now she can marry his father. In a case where she annuls the marriage after the death of Reuven, we say, no go. She can't marry the father anymore. Why is there such a distinction? Gemara says, Alma mishat nefila nireit kikalato. Because at the moment she falls to Yibum, she starts to look like a daughter-in-law. Achanami mishat nefila nireit kitzarat bito. So to in our scenario, in our Mishnah, she looks like a co-wife to the daughter. What that means is, and again, in the scenario where Reuven was married to this Ketana, Rachel passes away, and now she is available for Yibum. But had, before this time, she decided to perform Miyun while Reuven was still alive, and she annulled her marriage, Yaakov, Reuven's father, could have married her at that point in time. After she falls to Yibum, the only reason she's in the position of Yibum is because we started to acknowledge the first marriage as a real marriage. You only have to perform Yibum if the first marriage was a marriage, and therefore she's now available to the brothers through Yibum. So now the fact that she fell to Yibum, even though, again, it's only rabbinic in nature, it looks like we're treating like a real wife. Because now she's in the world of Yibum, because she's in the next stage already, it means that we acknowledge the first Kiddushin, and that's why she's available for Yibum. Now she goes ahead and annuls it. Okay, yes, it works. The annulment works. But to the outside world, it already looks like, even though she's performing the annulment and that she got rid of the Kiddushin, to the outside world, it looks like she fell to the Yabam. And then she annulled it at that point in time. It's as if Chalitza was performed with her, in a sense. She was engaged in the dealing with Yibum, means that we acknowledge the first marriage, and that's why she's in the world of Yibum. So at that point, we don't allow her to marry the father anymore, because it looks like it was his daughter-in-law. Because the first marriage was a binding marriage, in that sense. Reuven was married to her. When Reuven passes away, she's available to Yibum. That means we acknowledged her marriage to Reuven, makes her a daughter-in-law in Yaakov. All right, now she does Miyun. She does the annulment with Shimon, with her Yabam. Okay, she works. She annuls it. She wasn't married to Reuven. But the fact that she's even dealing with Shimon means that we acknowledged her marriage to Reuven. If we acknowledge her marriage to Reuven, she's no longer mutar to Reuven's father, Yaakov. That's the statement of Rami Bar Yechezkel. We now extend that to our Mishnah and say, by Bito, which is the first of the Arayot in our Mishnah, the Bito, where a case where she is also the daughter of Shimon. Reuven's married to the Ketana, Rachel, but Rachel is Shimon's daughter, and he has other co-wives. When he passes away, Shimon now has to deal with his own daughter, plus the co-wives. What are we suggesting over here? Let her perform Miyun with Shimon, with her father, and she'll annul the original marriage to Reuven, and now the co-wives will be available either for Chalitza or Yibum, because the erva is out of the picture. Mara says that doesn't look right, because when she performs Miyun with her father, Shimon, you're already acknowledging the marriage to Reuven. When you acknowledge the marriage to Reuven, then the other wives start to look like a tzarat ha'erva. They start, even though she's a ketana, midoraita doesn't exist, midorabanan, she starts to look like, the other wives start to look like tzarot ha'erva. Because they look like tzarot ha'erva, co-wives to an erva, we say no go, that we don't allow them to marry over here, and there's only the option of chalitza that needs to be performed over here with these co-wives. The fact that she's doing this with Shimon, or even if she's doing it with one of the other brothers, pick any brother that she does it with, shows you that we quasi-acknowledged her marriage to Reuven. Once you do that, then Reuven's co-wives become a co-wife to Shimon's daughter. And they become tzarot ha'erva. If they're tzarot ha'erva, they can't be in the world of Yibum. Now again, even though it's all rabbinic in nature, the fact that we acknowledged her marriage to Reuven rabbinically by asking her to deal with the Yabam over here and perform Yibum, then it looks bad, and we say all the tzarot are out. Meet the Rabbanan. We don't allow this, and we only perform chalitza, not yibum. Okay, this next Mishnah that was quoted a number of times in our Gemara, which is Sheish Arayot. There are six Arayot, Chamurot Mi'elu. that are more stringent than the ones that we find in our first Mishnah, the 15 in the first Mishnah, because they can only exist with third parties. Therefore, tsaroteim mutarot. Their co-wives are mutarot. Tsaroteim mutarot is what we've learned in the first parak. Rabbi and the Chachamim argued about the source for tsarot erva, and they argue also about this point, which is, how do you know that tsarot erva only applies to yibum? But outside the context of yibum, co-wives are not meaningful. So we said the Chachamim learned that out from Aleha. They say that tsarah is learned out of the word litzror. And then Aleha teaches you that only in the context of yibum is there a problem of co-wives to an erva. Outside the context of yibum, it doesn't matter. Rabbi learned that out of Vilakach Ulikacha Viabim Viibma, which was that Lakach Likuchin is only when you can marry both women do you get a choice to marry one of them. That's how he knows that Sarat Arvad is problematic. How do I know it's in the context of Yibum is Viabim versus Viibma? And that teaches only in the context of Yibum does it matter. But that means that when there's Yibum available, then co-wife to an Erva is knocked out of the picture. But in a scenario where there's no Yibum, co-wife to a Erva is not meaningful. So again, if Shimon's daughter goes ahead and marries Kalev, and Kalev has multiple wives and then passes away, even though, of course, Shimon can't marry his daughter that's married to Kalev, he can marry all the co-wives of his daughter because there's no relation to them. There's no Yibum over here. So that's the scenario in these six arayot. The reason that's the case is because none of the brothers from the father could ever marry such a woman. They have a relationship. This erva is so close to them that there's no way that only one of the brothers can have a problem with this erva. All the brothers, by definition, will have a problem with this erva. For instance, Imo, his mother, Eshet Aviv. I'll start with Eshet Aviv, which is the easiest. The father's wife. These brothers were all born from a different mother. Let's assume that every one of them is born from a different mother. It doesn't really matter. They're brothers through the father. Their father, Yaakov, goes ahead and then takes a wife, Bilhah. When he takes that wife, she becomes Eshet Aviv. As far as all the brothers are concerned, this woman is restricted to them because she is Eshet Aviv. Eshet Aviv will apply to all the brothers from the father, and therefore there's no way that any of the brothers could be married to this woman. So by definition, if their father passed away and this woman was available to be married, Eshet Aviv, their stepmother had to marry a third party. She didn't marry any of them because they are all related to her. They have Erva with her. And so there's never a case of Yibum with Eshet Aviv. By definition, these brothers couldn't have married their father's wife. Their stepmother is a surah to them. So therefore, she's definitely married to a third party. And if the third party passes away, then the co-wives are not restricted. Because this woman could never, ever marry one of the brothers. Therefore, there'll never be a scenario of Yibum. There's no scenario of Yibum because it's impossible for her to be married to one of the brothers through the father. So now by Imo, Imo is problematic, because if it's Imo, his mother, who's also Eshet Aviv, then you already said Eshet Aviv. Why do you need Imo? If it's just Imo, just his mother, then she's not restricted to the other brothers. So for instance, if Yaakov's married to Rachel and Leah, Rachel has Yosef, Leah has Reuven, Shimon, Levi, then if Yaakov passes away, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi are restricted to Rachel because it was Eshet Aviv. So what's the only scenario that Imo could be? It could be Anusat Aviv. A case where Yaakov raped Rachel and produced Yosef. And then through wedlock, he's married to Leah, and he produces Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. Then, in that instance, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi could marry Rachel, because it was Anusat Aviv. Anusat Aviv is not restricted to the brothers through the father. So Reuven, Shimon, and Levi could have married her. So what do you tell me? You can't marry her? This is what the Gemara in the first parak concluded, that this Mishnah is according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that Anusat Aviv is restricted to the brothers through the father or the children of the father. So in this case, where Yaakov raped Rachel to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, even though this all happened out of wedlock, nevertheless, she is now restricted. Rachel is restricted to Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, who were born from Leah and Yaakov's marriage. So that's the scenario here. This is what the Gemara told us earlier, that Rabbi Yehuda is the author of our Mishnah. Because this Imo must be Imo me Anusato. It's Imo that was Anusato, in order to distinguish it from Eshet Aviv. And that's why I thought maybe she could marry the brothers. Why can't she marry the brothers? Because this is Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, who says that Anusat Aviv is restricted to the children. So that's the case of Imo, Eshet Aviv. Achot Aviv, his father's sister. Their aunt, who is the father's sister, is restricted equally to all the brothers through the father. This is their father. For all these brothers, this is their father, and this is their aunt. So it's the aunt to all of them. Since it's an aunt to all of them, then there's no question that they can't have a case where one of them married this woman, and then there's a case of Yibum. Achoto me'aviv. If they have a sister through the father, they're all brothers through the father, and they also have a sister through a common father. Again, Yaakov, who has Yosef and Binyamin through Rachel, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi through Leah, and also has Dina through Leah. So none of the brothers can marry Dina because they share a common father. Since they share a common father, no brother can marry her. And if no brother can marry her, there's never going to be a case of Yibum. The only brother that possibly could marry her if it was their brother through the mother. For instance, if Yaakov was married to Rachel and Leah, had Yosef and Binyamin through Rachel, Reuben, Shimon, and Levi through Leah, and then Rachel or Leah, either after the death or pre their marriage, Yaakov was married to another man and had a daughter. So now, let's say, for instance, Rachel did that. Yosef and Binyamin have a half-sister because they share a common mother. For Reuben, Shimon, and Levi, they're not related to her at all. They don't share a common father, and they don't share a common mother. So not related. In that case, technically, they could marry that woman. So again, here, the common father, that she's a sister through the father, that makes it impossible for her to have be married to any of these brothers. Ve'eshet achei aviv, the wife of his brothers. And this is another way you can have an aunt. You can have an aunt because she is your father's sister. You can have an aunt also because a woman is married to one of your father's brothers. So again, in that case, all the brothers through the father are equally restricted to her because they are all related through the father. And the father is what's causing the problem of Erev Aviv. It's his brother, your uncle, is married to a woman. That is a surah to all the brothers equally. Ve'eshet achiv me'aviv. And the wife of one of his brothers through the father. Wait a minute. A wife of what? Eshet ach, that's the case of Yibum. No, it's a case where they had children. Eshet ach, a woman who was married to one of the brothers and they had children. So there's no Yibum over here. And then that brother passed away. That woman can never marry any of the other brothers. She's restricted by Eshet ach. She was the wife of their brother. And she's equally restricted to all the brothers through the father. She can't marry any one of them. So here you have a list of six arayot. Arayot that are so close, the relationship is so close, that none of the brothers through the father could have ever married this woman. Since that's the case, there will never be a case of Yibum with one of these arayot. Since there will never be a case of Yibum with one of these arayot, by definition, they are married to a third party. And the tzarot, the co-wives that we're talking about, are co-wives of an erva to a third party. So that's why the tzarot will always be mutarot. In this case of these level of erva, you know by definition if there are co-wives there, when they marry a third party, you can marry the co-wives because the co-wives are not in the context of Yibum. There will never be a context of Yibum with these arayot. Beit Shammai, matarim atzarot l'achim, ubeit Hillel osrim. This is something we saw earlier again in the Masechta back on Daf Chet Tet, where the Gemara was trying to establish that our Mishnah has no machloket in it. What do you mean our Mishnah has no machloket in it? We had the machloket of Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel, so about tzarat erva. Is there a restriction against the co-wives of an erva marrying and performing Yibum? Beit Hillel says yes. And of course, Beit Hillel are the authors of our first Mishnah who say that tzarot erva are turot. On the other hand, Beit Shammai believes that that's not the case. Tzarot erva are not turot, and therefore, they have to perform chalitza or Yibum. If you go ahead and the co-wives perform chalitza, chalitza, Beit Shammai poslim min hakuna, Beit Hillel machshirim. If chalitza is performed with one of the co-wives, Beit Shammai is posel min hakuna because Beit Shammai says she requires chalitza. She requires chalitza because there is no concept called tzarat erva. Beit Hillel says she does not require chalitza because there is no such thing as Yibum in the face of tzarat erva. So is the chalitza effective? According to Beit Shammai, it is effective. According to Beit Hillel, it's not effective. So therefore, for Beit Shammai, she is now a tzarat erva because a chalitza is one of those that cannot marry a Kohen afterwards. Midrabanan. But a chalutza, midrabanan, may not marry a Kohen. It's like equivalent of a divorcee. A divorcee can't marry a Kohen, so too a chalutza can't. According to Beit Shammai, where there was real chalitza, they can't go ahead and marry a Kohen. According to Beit Hillel, where there's no necessity for chalitza, because tzarot erva is automatically tura, then she can go ahead and marry a Kohen, because the chalitza was not meaningful. Nityabmu, If this Torah Tarifah goes out and forms Yibum, Beit Shammai Makshirin. Beit Shammai says that that woman is now kosher lekuna. If they give birth to a child, the child is kosher. If she then, whatever reason, either her husband dies, can go ahead and marry a Kohen because she's not a Zonah. She did not have an illicit relationship. Beit Hillel Poslim. Beit Hillel would say, if there's a child born, it would be a mamzer. And if she gets divorced from this, she had a now illicit relation with the Eshedach, with an Erva. That makes her into a Zonah, and she can no longer marry the Kohuna. Afapi she'elu osrim ve'elu matirim. Even though Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai have a difference in opinion, nevertheless, lo nimnu Beit Shammai milisan nashim Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai agreed to marry women from the houses of Beit Hillel. Ve'lo Beit Hillel mi Beit Shammai. And Beit Hillel did not withhold marrying women from the houses of Beit Shammai. Even though, according to Beit Hillel, the way that Beit Shammai is practicing, you're ending up with mamzerim. And according to the way that Beit Shammai holds, in the world of Beit Hillel, you have women who were supposed to perform Yibum who are now getting married to third parties and restricted by Lo Tia Isha Chutza, the Ish Zar. She can't go out to an Ish Zar, the Chutza. Nevertheless, they didn't withhold from marrying each. It's a beautiful idea that even though they disagreed halachically, they're willing to marry into each family. Now, it's not as pretty as it seems, as Rashi mentions over here. They didn't marry these women, but Lefisha Yumodim Lehem. They used to let each other know, which is that Beit Shammai held this way. But when a person from Beit Hillel came along to marry one of their wives, he said, listen, this is from a family that you don't hold up. So don't marry this family. They would explain to them that. And it's, again, a beautiful idea that we understand our halachic differences. We let each other live by our halachic differences, but we'll make sure that you don't get into a problem when you disagree with me. According to your opinion, I know that this is problematic, so don't marry this woman. So that's the way that Rashi describes what's transpiring here in the Mishnah. Kol ha'tarot v'tmeyot she'yu elu mitarim v'elu mitamim. If Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai disagree with regards to Tuma and Tara, lo nimnu lo sim tarot elu agabe elu. They trusted each other. If they borrowed a utensil from one and the other, they didn't say, oh no, that they don't hold like us, therefore it's all tamei. They just assumed that they kept the practices, or they would let them know that it was something where they disagreed, and therefore there was no suspicion between them. There was an open line between them. So again, they were able to separate the human aspect from the halachic aspect. We can disagree halachically. That doesn't mean that we can't interact on a human basis, on a ben adam lechaveru basis. They're respectful of their differences. And that's an important principle that's really established by the Mishnah over here. It's a fundamental principle that ben adam lechaveru is very important. And that we learn in this week's Parsha, Parshat Breshit, that derech eretz trumps, even in a situation where there might be a chashash of a halachic mistake or a misunderstanding, because Hashem says, Naseh Adam B'Tzalmeinu, that derech eretz is that you go ahead and you ask, even though you're the top gun and you're the decider, you should still take counsel with the people that are with you. Hashem takes counsel with the malachim, because it's going to affect them, even though he doesn't have to. He can do whatever he wants. Nevertheless, he says, Naseh Adam B'Tzalmeinu, even though people would make a mistake and think there are multiple gods there, because it says, Naseh, let us make, in the plural. Nevertheless, the Midrash says, and Rashi quotes it, derech eretz trumps. It was so important to teach this derech eretz that even though people might misunderstand and think there are multiple gods, it was worth it to teach derech eretz. You see how important derech eretz is, and same thing over here. Derech eretz here trumps all the halachic differences between them, so that the halachic differences aren't enough to make the ben adam lechaveru fall apart. All right, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, my taima d'Beit Shammai. What's the reasoning behind Beit Shammai's opinion? Dichtiv. Because it says, Lo tia eshet hameta chutza le'ish zar. The woman in a situation in which there is someone married to one of the brother passes away, and now the women are available to Yibum. They are restricted from marrying third parties until they take care of the Yibum issue, either through Yibum or Chalitza. They must address that issue first. And until that point in time, she's restricted from marrying third parties, which is Lo tia eshet hameta chutza le'ish zar. So now, the way Beit Shammai interprets that is, chutza michlal deika primit. Chutza means that there's someone closer. They're reading the word chutza to mean that this is a woman who is more distantly related, meaning that there's someone who is more closely related. They're suggesting that this pasuk is talking about someone who is a co-wife to an erva. A co-wife to an erva. Who's closer to the brother of Yabam? The erva. So that's the primit. The chutza is the co-wife, the one who's not related. And in that scenario, we say, Lo tia eshet hameta chutza li'ish zar. This woman cannot go marry a third party. Since you can't marry a third party, therefore she must be available for Yibum and Chalitza. And that's what Beit Shammai says over here. This woman, who is a co-wife to an erva, she's the chutza, the erva is the primit, and yet the Torah is saying that the wife who's more distantly connected has to perform Yibum or Chalitza, otherwise she cannot marry a third party. That's the source for Beit Shammai's position. V'amar Rachmana lotiyeh. Pasuk says about a woman who is chutza, who is the less or less closely related, she has to be a chutza. Beit Hillel, mibayiluhu, like Rav Yehuda Marav. Beit Hillel uses the word achutza to teach the din of Rav Yehuda Marav, and therefore they don't have it available for the limud of Beit Shammai. Dam Rav Yehuda Marav, minayin shein kedushin tofsim v'yavama. How do you know that if a third party tries to marry a woman who is available for Yibum, that it doesn't work? Even though in general, when there's only an Iser Lav, kedushin is tofsin, the marriage is effective in situations where the only restriction to the marriage is an asay or a lav. When there's karet, when there's skila, we say the kedushin are tofsin. That's such a strong irva that if you try to marry, the marriage doesn't take hold. On the other hand, when you have a restriction that are weaker, like an asay or a lav, then the marriage takes hold even though it's an improper illegal marriage. So over here it should take hold because this yavama is waiting for yibum. She needs chalitza or yibum. And the only restriction on her here is lo tiyeh eshet hameit hachutz leish zar. She's not allowed to be married to an outside party. That's only a lav. So if some third party comes and is mekadesh her, it should go through. How do I know it doesn't work in this case? That's what Beit Hillel says. They learned that out from Amar Yehuda Marav, which is lo tiyeh eshet hameit hachutz leish zar, lo tiyeh ba havaya. There will be no kiddushin. The word havaya or tiyeh implies a relationship of kiddushin. It says here, lo tiyeh. There will be no kiddushin to this eshet hameit hachutza liizar, to an outside party. So that's why they'd learn from Amar Rav Yehuda Marav. Now, obviously, Amar Rav Yehuda Marav are after Beit Hillel. The Gemara is doing is taking Rav Yehuda Marav's limud and superimposing that in the position of Beit Hillel to say this is why Beit Hillel doesn't hold like Beit Shammai, because they use the word achutz already for another meaning. So Beit Shammai miktiv lachutz, chutz aktiv. It doesn't say that the way you would want to read the pasuk according to Beit Hillel is lo tiyeh eshet hameitz lachutz, to an outsider. Doesn't mean chutz implies that she is the outsider, not that she is now marrying to someone who is an outsider. The way Beit Hillel are reading it, it's lachutz, not chutzah. So that's why Beit Shammai would not learn this way. Beit Shammai miktiv lachutz, chutz aktiv. Since it writes chutza, it's the equivalent of lachutz. Why? So this is a principle that we see throughout the Torah. The Tanya, Rabbi Nechemiah Omer, kol teva shetzricha lamed b'tchilata. Any word that should have had a lamed in the beginning, hitila katuv hey b'sofa. Pasuk puts an extra hey at the end, which is the equivalent of le. If you want to say, I'm going to the mountain, you could say, ani olech lahar. I'm going to the mountain. Or you could say, ani olech hahara. That additional hay is the equivalent of lahar. So the Gemara is going to give a couple of examples of that. Kol tiva shetzricha lamed tchilata yitila hay b'sofa, v'tana debi Rabbi Shmuel kagon. Elim is the name of a place. Elima means to Elim, le Elim. Machanaim is the name of a place. Machanaima is to le Machanaim. Mitzrayim, again, a name of a place. Mitzrayma means le Mitzrayma. Divlataima means that they want to go to the place called Divlataim. Yerushalayma means le Yerushalayim. And Hamidbaro is also la Midbar. Oh, there it's the Heya Yediyah, so it would be to the Hamidbar, le Hamidbar. So that would be the case here. We give examples of cases throughout the Torah and Tanakh that have this Hey at the end where it means le. So that's what Beit Hillel says over here. Chutza means the equivalent. Chutza is the equivalent of lachutz. So therefore, that's why we interpreted it that way. So now you have a machloket here between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as how to interpret the word chutza. Beit Shammai says chutza is referencing the yivama, and it says that the yivama, who is a chutza, is subject to chalitza and yibum. That means in a case of a co-wife and an erva, the erva is not subject, but the one who's more distant, the chutza one, is subject to yibum and chalitza. Therefore, a co-wife of an erva is available for yibum and chalitza. On the other hand, Beit Hillel believes that that chutz is coming to teach you that kiddushin don't work by a yivama. But then it's not available to teach you this other din of Beit Shammai, and that's why Beit Hillel says co-wives are restricted from litzror. They learn out either from litzror like the Rabbanon or like Rabbi Yehuda from the word lakach. Now the Gemara says, Ubeit Shammai, to Rabbi Yehuda Marav Minolahu. Where does Beit Shammai know that this kedushin is not tovsin by a yevama? Me the ish zar nafko. They learn that out, that you can't be to an ish zar. So Gemara says, Ubeit Hillel, nami typical of an ish zar. Why does the Beit Hillel learn out of that? And then they'd have chutzah like Beit Shammai. Gemara says, Zeinochanami, you're right. That they learn it out the same way Beit Shammai is the ish zar. She can't be to a foreign person. Ish is ishut. So there can't be a marriage, there can't be kiddushin with an outside party. That's they learn out of ish zar. Where it says, okay, then chutzah lomali. Then what does Beit Hillel do with the word chutzah? The rabot harusa. To teach you that sometimes there is a woman who is an outsider because she wasn't fully married, she didn't have nisuin, and yet she's still within the world of yibum. That means that according to Beit Hillel, a woman who is fully married with the consummation of marriage nisuin can fall to yibum. But also a woman only has kiddushin also falls for yibum. Even though she had never consummated the marriage with the first individual, the kiddushin is strong enough to bring her into the world of yibum. How do they learn that? They learn out of the word chutzah, which is this was a woman who was chutzah, was not an insider, she was an outsider. Why is she an outsider? Because she only has kiddushin. She does not have nisuin, and yet she's still within the world of chalitza and yibum. V'idach, what about Beit Shammai? Where do they know that an arusa also has to perform yibum? Mechutza ha-chutza. They learn it out of the fact that it says chutza, and it could have said chutza, instead it says ha-chutza. So that extra hey. V'idach, what about Beit Hillel? What do they do with that extra hey? Chutza ha-chutza lo mashmahu. They say that's just literary. There's no extraneous hey here, and they don't darshan anything. So here you have a major machloka at Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. On two of the issues they agree. One issue is that a woman who was only married through Kiddushin and not Nisuin is then in the world of Yibum afterwards. If her husband passed away without children, obviously, she was never married to him and she's the only wife, then certainly they didn't have children because they only had Kiddushin. Then she falls to Yibum to the brothers even though she only had Kiddushin. The second thing is that Kiddushin are not tofsim with the Yivama. Yivama who's in waiting for Yibum or Chalitza, if she tries to marry a third party, the Kiddushin don't work. That Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree on. The only thing they disagree on, which is a pretty major thing, is Tzarat Erva, co-wives of Nerva. Beit Shammai says they are in the world of Yibum and Chalitza. Beit Hillel says they are not. They are Pturot from Yibum and Chalitza, and that's the machlok between them, learned out of the word ha-chutza. Alright, now, the Gemara offers an alternative. Rav Amar, Tamayu de Beit Shammai. At this point, Rabbi Shimon Pazi had offered us an explanation of the position of Beit Shammai, that it comes out of the pasuk Lo Tiayish Damed, ha-chutza li Zar. Rava now offers an alternative explanation of their opinion, and Rava says, Tamayu Beit Shammai, den Isur Chalal Isur. One Isur can't fall upon another Isur. Once a woman is restricted, you can't add on another restriction on top of that. Rashi says here, this is what Rava intended originally. Gemara's questioning is because whoever asked the question misunderstood it, and we're going to see in the end what he meant. Tinach Hecha, the Nasa Meit, V'achakach Nasa Chai. That makes sense when the brother who passed away was married first. And then afterwards, the new brother came into the picture. Because then, lo ati yisra achotisha, v'chayal al yisra eshedach. Because that instant, the restriction of achotisha doesn't come and ruin the yisra of eshedach. So in an instance where Reuven and Shimon are marrying sisters, Reuven's marrying Rachel, Shimon marries Leah. Reuven marries Rachel first. So at first, for Shimon, Rachel is eshedach. That's the first erva then. Then when Shimon goes ahead and marries Leah, which he's permitted to do, then he adds on top of that, Rachel is not only Eshedach, she's now Achot Isha. But since Eshedach existed originally, we say Ein Yisur Chal Al Yisur. The Yisur of Achot Isha does not take hold now. Since it doesn't take hold now, the only restriction to Shimon is Eshedach. Well, if the only restriction is Eshedach, then Yibum is still in the picture. If Yibum is still in the picture, that's why Beit Shammai says the Tzarot of Ben Erva have to form Yibum. If Shimon got married first to Leah, and then only afterwards did Reuben marry Rachel, then Achot Isha Kadim. The problem of Achot Isha existed prior to the problem of Eshedach. Because Reuben's wife Rachel was first restricted to Shimon because she was the sister of his wife. Then only later when Reuben marries her do we add on Eshedach. But that means Achot Isha is the first one. Gemara says, Kevin delo ati Isher Eshedach v'chayo. Since the Yisra Eshedach never takes hold, Ha-Yisra Achot Isha, Havila Tzarat Erva Shelo B'Makom Mitzvah Sharia. Then there's no longer a problem of Yibum, because Yibum only comes out of a relationship of Eshedach. But since this woman doesn't have any restriction of Eshadah, because it's as if she's not in the world of Yibum. She's not in the world of Yibum, then her co-wives are totally fine, because co-wives outside the world of Yibum are permissible, co-wives to an erva. So what the Gemara does now and says is that it doesn't matter which way the erayot come about, no matter what, there is a availability of the co-wives to get married here. Because there's two scenarios. Reuven and Shimon are marrying Rachel and Leah. They're marrying two sisters. If Reuven marries first, then Reuven marries Rachel, Shimon is restricted to Rachel because of Eshadach. Then when Shimon later marries Leah and brings in Achot Isha, that doesn't take hold because Achot Isha was after Eshadach. Eshadach already exists. She's a surah already. Since she's a surah, you can't add on something on top of it. Achot Isha is as if it doesn't exist. Since it doesn't exist, if then Reuven dies, Shimon could perform Yibum with the co-wives. Because there's no restriction of Achot Isha. There's no erva anymore. Eshadach went away with the death of Reuven. Because now that it's available for Yibum, Achot Isha never existed. Tosafot asks, if that's the case, why can he only marry the co-wives? Should he even have been able to marry the erva herself? Because the erva doesn't exist. So Tosafot quotes a concept from Nidarim, which says that it's Poreach Ba'avir. The Isser of the erva of Achot Isha is just waiting. It's waiting till an opportunity that it can take hold. While she is still married to Reuven, she has a restriction of Eshadach, and that came first. So as long as she is the restriction of Eshadach, Achot Isha is not relevant. When Reuven dies, and Eshadach disappears, then Achot Isha comes into the picture right then. It comes and fills in that void. So then the Erva remains Achot Isha. The Tzarota Erva, they're not a Tzarota Erva, because why were they Tzarota Erva? Why were they co-wives to an Erva? Because they were Eshet Ach. Eshadach's gone. But now she's Achot Isha. But Achot Isha, they're no longer co-wives. He's already passed away. Reuven's passed away. So at the moment that Achot Isha comes into the picture, the co-wives are no longer co-wives because their husband has passed away. So for that reason, the co-wives are mutarot to Shimon, but the Ervaya herself is not permitted. On the other hand, if they went the other way, which is Shimon got married to Leah first, when Shimon got married to Leah, the first restriction to him is Achot Isha. Rachel is the sister of his wife. Only later on do we add in the other Erva of Eshadach when Reuven marries Rachel. So what's the only Erva that exists over here? Achot Isha. That means that there's no Eshadach over here. So why in that case are the Tzarot permitted? Exactly for that reason. Because Eshadach doesn't exist. If Eshadach doesn't exist, there's no Yibum here. No Yibum because the whole premise for Yibum is because she was his brother's wife. Well, if there's no restriction or Easter of Eshadach, then she's not his brother's wife. She's not his brother's wife. And we have co-wives, Shaloba Makom Yibum. Co-wives of Shaloba Makom Yibum are permitted. And therefore you can marry these women. So that's what Rava says in his Beit Shammai's reasoning why co-wives to an Erva are permitted to marry the Yabam. Because in either scenario, they are not co-wives to an Erva. They're either not co-wives to an Erva that involves Yibum, because Eshadach's out of the picture, or the other way around. They were only co-wives to an Erva of Eshadach, but Eshadach's now gone because of the Yibum, and therefore they're no longer co-wives to an Erva. Okay, now, Chaltzu Beit Shammai Puslim. The Gemara says, Pshita. The line in our Mishnah at the top of this Amud is obvious. If Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel argue about whether Tzarot Erva require Yibum or not, then it's obvious that if they perform Chalitza, going to Beit Shammai is going to be effective and therefore have a result of making her Asur Lekuna. Whereas Beit Hillel is going to say it doesn't make any difference. The Gemara says, Lafuke de Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. This comes to exclude the statement of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, the Amar. We're going to see this later on Yudalat Amud Bet, and then later on the Masechta again. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, let's solve the problem of the Machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, and just have all co-wives to an Erva do Chalitza. According to Beit Hillel, it's not necessary, but what's the downside of her performing Chalitza? According to Beit Shammai, it's necessary. But if we do that in all instances, then there'll never be a problem because both Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel will always agree that this woman had chalitza and now she's fine. Okay, maybe she can't marry the kahuna. That's a midrabanan. But at least we got rid of the problem of mamzerut and the problem of iser kahuna doraita to marry this woman of azona doraita, because now even Beit Hillel will agree that she performed chalitza and Beit Shammai will agree because she performed chalitza. Mar says, Kamash Malan, to Beit Hillel Machshirim, Beit Hillel is makshir even without chalitza. They don't require chalitza whatsoever. Beit Hillel's tzarat erva is p'turah legamre. She doesn't need chalitza whatsoever, and they don't agree with this premise of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri that he should always perform chalitza. Nityamu. If the tzarot erva, go ahead and perform yibum, Beit Hillel poslim the kuna, because she's now a zonah, she married someone who is restricted by Eshadach. Where it says, atu lamali, why do I need this? Again, it's a direct derivative of their opinion. If they say tzarot erva do not require yibum, and they go ahead and perform yibum, you're now pugeya by Eshadach. You're pugeya by Eshadach, you have a problem of zonah, of course she's psula the kuna. Where it says, I did tana chaltsu, tamanami nityabmu. Since they had to write Chalitza, they also wrote about Yibum. It's just a literary connection in the Mishnah. You're right, it wasn't necessary. It's not autumn. We have a Mishnah over there. It's going to lead us into a Sugya, which will end in the middle of Yud Dalet. But at least for now, we will deal with the beginning of this scenario. This has to do with Bechokar, Beit Hillel, and Beit Shammai. And how was it possible that they were practicing different things? It's not autumn. Megillah, Nikreit, Be'achad Asar, B'shneim Asar, B'shlosh Asar, B'asar, B'chamish Asar. This is a flashback to the first Mishnah in Megillah. Megillah can be read on the 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th. Lo pachod lo yoter, not before, not after. Amalei Reish Lakish, the Rabbi Yochanan, Yechreikan, lo tiyat godudu. This is a problem of lo tiyat godudu, lo tasu agudot agudot. You're making people into these partisan groups by having them have different practices. Some people are reading the Megillah on the 11th, some on the 12th, some on the 13th, 14th, 15th. You're making, breaking everybody down into smaller factions. And we don't want that. We want a single rule for all of Klal Yisrael. So Rebbe says, "Hi, lo tidgodo mi baile le gufei." How can you claim the Easter of lo tidgodo means don't break down into factions or don't have practices that make you into factions? We need it for the Easter that it says. What's the Easter it says? Damar rechmanu lo tasu chabura al meit. Don't injure yourself over the death of an individual. Don't make cuts in yourself over the sorrow, angst, pain of the death, which was a practice of people at that time. Don't emulate that practice. You need to say lo tigodudu. Where it says imkein lemekra lo tigodudu. Don't be godudu. Gold means to cut. So lo tigodudu would have been sufficient. What is lo titgodudu? So my lo tigodudu shmamina lo hachi du'ata teaches us both things. Teaches us the core isur not to injure yourself over a mate, and also teaches the additional restriction, which is don't break up into factions. Or don't have your practices break you into factions. So the word gedida would have been sufficient for a cut. Tit go to do already makes it something more than that. Well, if it says lo tit go to do, maybe the whole point of the pasuk is to teach you don't break up into factions and forget about making a wound or a cut in yourself over a mate. Where it says imkein lemakra lo tagodu from the word gedud, which would be a faction. So my lo tit go to do, shmamina tarte. The word tit go to do, which has embedded in it both the terminology gidud, which is a faction, and the word gidida, which is a chabura. Therefore, we learn both things from this lav. Number one is you can't injure yourself or cut yourself for a mate. And number two is you can't injure yourself in general. And then there's another problem, is you can't do or practice things that will make you into factions. That's the question Reish Lakish poses to Rabbi Yochanan. Malei ad kan lo shanita. Wait a minute. You didn't learn the Mishnah in Psachim that says, Makom shenagu laso malacha b'arev Psachim ha'chatzot osim. In places where they have a minag to do malacha on Erev Pesach in the morning, they do it. Makom shenagu lo laso dein osim. What do you mean? The Mishnah directly says you can have different practices. You can have a practice in one place where they don't do malacha. You have a practice in another place where they do malacha. So we see there are different practices. What's bothering you about this in Megillah? I'm like, Amina lechana isura? I tell you about an isura, and then you tell me about a minhug? How do we know it's an isura? Because, Amar Rav Shimon ben Arba, Amar Rav Yochanan, the kayim et meir purim bizmanehem. Zmanim harbei tiknu lahem chachamim. So they, chachamim established different times, and the different times, if you're a ben krach, or if you're a ben kfar, all of these have different dinim. If you're in an unwalled city, you read on the 14th. You can't read on the 15th. If you're in a walled city, you got to read on the 15th, can't read on the 14th. We see that that's an osur, meaning that you must read on this day, not on the other day. That's isur and heter. Whereas, v'ata martli minhogo, you're trying to ask me about a minhog? You're telling me, oh, they have a minhog not to do malachah here, a minhog to do malachah here. That doesn't create agudot. Where it says, v'atam lavi surah havya, you're telling me that there's no isur involved there in the multiple practices? That's none. We have a mission over there. Halayla, the night of the 14th, the night of Bedikat Chametz. Beit Shammai Osrim. Beit Shammai says, you're asur b'malacha. Beit Hillel matirim. Beit Hillel says, no, it's mutar b'malacha, only starting in the morning of the 14th do people have a practice not to do malacha. So amalei, hata marue malacha hu deleitle. The Gemara says, amalei, hata marue omer malacha hu deleitle. Over there, it's not really creating factions. Because the people who are doing work, okay, they do work. The people that don't do work, you cannot do work for two reasons. You cannot do work because you believe that it's usur to do work. Or you cannot do work because you don't have any work to do. So the case is an outside party looking at this individual has no idea why they're not doing work. Are they not doing work because it's restricted? Or they're not doing work because they don't have any work. So over there, it doesn't look like factions because even those that are not doing work, they don't look like they have a different practice. It just looks like they don't have work to do. So that doesn't create factions. It's not obvious that they have a different restriction. But over here, it looks like it is a different restriction because a Megillah we're forcing you to read on different days and you can't read on the alternate day. And it's obvious if you don't read on the 14th and you read on the 15th that you didn't read on the 14th. And the same is true with the 14th. If you read on the 14th and don't read on the 15th, it's obvious you're not reading on the 15th. So there it's obvious that there's factions created. Gemara says, wait a minute. Va'beit Shammai matirim etzarot achim u'beit Hillel osrim. Over here our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai had different practices. Beit Hillel did not allow the Tzarot Ha'erva to marry, and Beit Shammai allowed the Tzarot Ha'erva to marry. Mar says, Misavarat asu Beit Shammai k'divrehem, lo asu Beit Shammai k'divrehem. You think that Beit Shammai practiced like their opinion? No, they didn't. They didn't practice like their opinion. They had an opinion, Beit Hillel had an opinion, but then Beit Hillel's opinion governed. And since Beit Hillel's position governed, even Beit Shammai practiced like Beit Hillel, even though they disagreed with it. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, asu vasu. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, they did practice, each one according to his reasoning, or each one according to his opinion. Beit Hillel practiced according to their opinion. Beit Shammai practiced according to their opinion. Uplukta de Rav Shmuel. And it's similar to a machloka Rav Shmuel, that which we just said now, which is, de Rav Amar lo asu. Beit Shammai k'divrehem. Rav, like our previous Gemara says, like Rish Lakish suggested to Rabbi Yochanan, they did not practice. Beit Shammai did not practice this. They had this opinion, but they did not practice this. Whereas Shmuel Amar, asuv asu, like Rabbi Yochanan, Shmuel says that they did practice this. So they have a machloket about how our Mishnah. We have a machloket Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. In the Mishnah, when Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel have a machloket, did that machloket persist into practice? And therefore they had different practices? Or did they all pass on like Beit Hillel and they hadn't practiced like Beit Hillel, even though they had a difference of opinion originally? So Reish Lakish and Rav say that's the case, that our Mishnah is no evidence of having multiple opinions and have those multiple opinions go into practice, because nobody practiced like Beit Shammai. Everybody practiced like Beit Hillel. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel say that there were different practices that derived from our Mishnah. Beit Shammai practiced like their way, Beit Hillel practiced their way. And even though that looks like a gudot, it's not a problem, and that we'll deal with in tomorrow's daf, which is, why is it or is it not a problem over here? Gemara is first going to have to determine when it is that this existed, that you would say that Beit Shammai practice like their opinion. Then afterwards, it's going to have to explain, why isn't it lo tidgodudu, the fact that they did have different practices over here. And so that'll be take us way through tomorrow's amud. So we'll stop over here, four lines down on the top of Yudal Amud Aleph.